So today we are looking at Dhammapada verse 302, which reads as follows. Dupabajang durabhiramang duravasa garadukha dukho samana sangvaso dukkhanupatitadagu Tasma na cha dhaggu siya, na cha dukkhanu patitto siya. Which means, difficult is the going forth, leaving the home. Difficult to enjoy. But difficult is life in a home, painful. Painful is dwelling with those who are dissimilar. But painful is wandering, afflicted by suffering. Therefore, one should not be a wanderer. One should not be afflicted by suffering. So this verse was taught to a monk who had formerly been a prince when the Buddha was living in Vaisali, in the great forest near Vaisali. So the story goes that this monk, was formerly a prince in Vaisali, who enjoyed great luxury, great affluence, great comfort and pleasure as a layperson. But for whatever reason, it doesn't say, he had the great intention to leave behind the home life and ordain under the Buddha in the Buddha Sasana as a Buddhist monk, and lived his life successfully as a forest-dwelling monk in the great forest near Vaisali. But it happened that one day there was a great festival, a great celebration in the city, and the sound of musical instruments and drums and partying and singing and dancing and festivities, drinking and eating and drinking and sensual enjoyment was happening. While he was living in the great forest, he could hear in the nearby city all of the festivities. And as a result, this broke his concentration, it broke his focus, it distracted him. And not only did it affect his meditation, he found himself comparing his life living in the forest, alone, wearing rags for robes, eating scraps and leftovers and one meal a day with no luxury or pleasure or entertainment. And he began to feel rather sorry for himself, yearning for some sort of sensual pleasure, dreaming of the festivities that he was hearing and could imagine going on in the city at the time. And so he said to himself, he spoke out loud, "Here I sit in the forest alone, like a discarded dead log, useless like a log. Who can there be who is more pitiful than I? thinking he was feeling rather sorry for himself and feeling rather disenchanted with life as a monk. Now a tree spirit nearby was paying attention and heard him moaning and complaining to himself. And he appeared before this monk and said to him, "Alone you dwell in the forest like a discarded log. Many are those who envy you. Those going to hell envy the ones who make it to heaven. And this monk, surprised by this interruption, surprised to hear this voice out of nowhere, spent the night in reflection and in the morning went to see the Buddha and asked the Buddha about this, told the Buddha about what had happened, that he had been visited by a spirit in the night, that he had become disenchanted and depressed and unhappy with his life as a monk. And the Buddha said, "Well, it's true. What you say is true. What you feel is reasonable. But in order to teach the comparison and the relationship, the relative suffering between an ascetic, a Buddhist monk, and a person living in a house, he taught the five types of suffering as presented in this verse." So this is a good example as a story of the dilemma, the problem presented by craving. And there are two points in the story, related concepts that show the problem with craving, with desire, with sensual enjoyment in general. The first is the idea that the grass is always greener. As we say in English, that no matter what you have, you always want more. You always compare what you have to what you don't have. It's the nature of craving to never be satisfied. And so we create narratives of what would make us happy. If only I had this, this would make me happy. If only that, that would make me happy. And we often approach meditation, monasticism, in a similar light. So a person living in the home, might decide to ordain to escape the suffering that they have in the home life, and will be often disappointed by how uncomfortable it can be to live as an ascetic. So they have experienced the suffering of living in a home and crave for a release from that. And to some extent there's value in that. There's value in seeing the suffering, but it's a mistake to think that ordaining is the solution. Leaving home, running away is never the way to free yourself from suffering. Leaving home, going to live in the forest is a way of confronting, giving yourself the opportunity to confront the suffering. And then it goes both ways, that a person who has ordained for good or for bad reason will of course often be become unhappy with ordination, craving what they don't have, craving the sensuality that they had as a layperson. And the second aspect of craving is how it distorts your perception. That happiness is all about the way you look at something. And suffering as well is in how you perceive things. It's not our experiences that bring happiness or bring suffering, it's our perception of them. So a person living in the forest, this is the lesson of this tree spirit, that the very same experience of living at the forest can either be living in the forest can either be seen as unpleasant and uncomfortable and depressing, or it can be uplifting, enlightening, it can be freeing, liberating. Living alone in the forest is either lonely or it's peaceful. And the difference between lonely and peaceful is, of course, your perspective. The same place, living in the forest, two people living alone in the forest can have completely different experiences based on their perspective. Our craving distorts our experience. Craving, aversion, these are the qualities of mind that color our experience and create the stress and suffering of dissatisfaction. We don't like what we have, we want what we don't have. We like what we have, we don't want it to change, etc., etc. And we have disappointment because reality doesn't follow our wishes, our expectations, our likes and dislikes. So the lesson, the main lesson that we gain from this story as a reminder of our reasons for practicing mindfulness is the importance in cultivating objectivity, that our experiences and changing our experiences and fixing our experiences and controlling our experiences will never be a true source of happiness, peace, or freedom from suffering. Coming away to live in the forest is not the solution to your problems. Running away from ordinary life is not the solution to your problems. And of course, staying in the home life, staying in the world, chasing after sensuality is also not the solution. The solution is beyond any ideas of home life or monastic life, forest or city. It goes beyond the details and the specifics of our experience, and it cuts to the very nature of experience itself in general. So a person living in a city or living in a forest theoretically has the same chance to see clearly and free themselves from suffering. Our reasons again for leaving the home life are not to escape suffering, but to be able to confront it more successfully, to not be distracted from our task of confronting, facing, and seeing clearly the nature of suffering to find true freedom from suffering. Running away is never the way, again, to free ourselves from suffering. The verse gives a more detailed explanation of this. In a sense, it's the same idea, but it talks about five types of suffering. So this is a valuable in relation to people considering ordination or considering even to come to a meditation center. It's valuable for those who have come to the meditation center to put things in perspective and not be discouraged too much by the stress and suffering that comes from withdrawal, not getting what you want, not being able to enjoy entertainment and sensuality and all the things that you can do in your ordinary life at home. To not lose sight of the truth of craving and clinging and suffering. To not forget that our reasons for coming here often have to do with the stress and suffering that we had in the home life. So the Buddha talks about five types of suffering. The first type of suffering is the suffering of leaving the home. Even just coming to a meditation center to do a meditation course is unpleasant. It's uncomfortable much of the time. You know, having to leave what is comfortable, having to leave what is convenient, having to leave behind all of the luxury and convenience of living in a home. Obviously, becoming a Buddhist monastic, putting on robes, shaving off your hair, living in the forest and completely giving up all of your possessions is a greater degree, but the same applies to someone leaving home temporarily to come to live in the forest. Living here is never going to be as comfortable physically as living in a house with a nice bed and a hot shower and food that you like, the food that you want all the time, and friends and entertainment and enjoyment and so on and so on. So even making the decision to leave can be uncomfortable. Even a person making this temporary decision to leave the home life and temporarily come to do a meditation course will have to deal with the knowledge that they're voluntarily undertaking something that will be uncomfortable, physically and mentally uncomfortable. It's a source of some amount of anguish for most meditators, I think, the fear and the uncertainty, will I be able to do it? It's a difficult thing to do. Good to acknowledge this, because it can be an obstacle. If you let it, if you turn it into a boogeyman, you know, in your mind, let it consume you and let it grow this fear inside, afraid of coming to the forest, afraid of undertaking a meditation course, afraid of leaving what is comfortable and convenient. It can prevent you from doing something which is ultimately valuable and beyond value, that is something that can be life-changing, something that is of great benefit far beyond the pleasure of the senses that we get from living a comfortable life. I mean, often the reasons why we've decided to come in the first place. The second type of suffering is the suffering that comes when you have undertaken the monastic life, either as a meditator living in a meditation center or as a Buddhist monastic. So the Buddha said it's difficult to leave home, difficult to even make that decision. It's worth appreciating that you've made that decision. But second, it's difficult to enjoy having left home. It's not so difficult to enjoy the pleasures of the sense, which will never satisfy us, but will constantly be a source of sensual pleasure. Pleasant sights and sounds and smells and tastes, there's always something we can seek out that will please us. You don't get that same sort of pleasure having left home, having left behind sensuality, living in the forest, living at the root of a tree or in an empty room, eating one meal a day, engaging in intensive meditation practice. You don't have the opportunity to enjoy things. This Buddha said this is difficult. We acknowledge that. This can be unpleasant, uncomfortable for sure. But the third type of suffering is the suffering that we have left behind. We have left behind so much suffering to come and live here in the forest. How much stress and busyness have we left behind in our lives in the city, our lives even with our families and our friends and our relatives, our work, our employment, politics and economy, all the things we've left behind. Even more, a person who has given them up and put on robes and picked up a bowl and wanders for alms, eating the food that they get, how much more have they left behind, have they freed themselves from? People look at a Buddhist monk and whether they are able to do it themselves will often admire the lifestyle, quite often wishing that they too could have that sort of freedom. knowing that living the life of a householder, living in the world, can be stressful. You have the stress of political uncertainty, of economic uncertainty. You have the stress of relationships with family, with partners, with children. You have your possessions to worry about, your domicile. You have all of the entrapments that come with living in society, all of the stress and busyness. And it can be pleasant, but that pleasure, of course, never satisfies and always leaves you dissatisfied, disappointed, yearning for more, never enough. It's a big reason why people decide to ordain, because they've just found themselves unable to experience contentment, peace. There's much stress that comes from the busyness of living in the household life, and it's a valid reason for deciding to go to live in the forest. And the Buddha said, difficult as well is living in a household life. And this goes back to the earlier point that grass is always greener. It's not whether you're living in a house or living in a forest. Suffering follows you. If you came here thinking that it would be pleasant and comfortable and peaceful, well, you'll be quickly disabused of that idea, realizing that suffering follows you, not because of where you are, but because of your perceptions and your perspective, clouded by greed, clouded by anger. And the great thing, the great in that is that we therefore can find true and lasting freedom from suffering without having to have it depend on where we are. You know, we never have to be concerned about our experiences, what we have, what we don't have, where we are, where we go. Our peace and our happiness, our freedom from suffering, comes from within, comes from the way that we look at reality. The fourth type of suffering that the Buddha mentioned is it is painful to be with those who are dissimilar. This is a fairly specific idea, but valuable in the context. It relates to the idea of leaving home. Because living in the world, one of the many things that you have going for it is your ability to pick and choose. You can pick and choose food and clothing and possessions, but you can also pick and choose the people you associate with. When you leave home and come to live in a meditation center, a Buddhist monastery, you're thrust into the mix with people who you don't know, from different walks of life, who may be very different in their temperament from you. And more importantly, you might be thrust in the mix with people who are of bad behavior. Now, one of the great things about living in a meditation center, and theoretically a Buddhist monastery as well, is that you generally are surrounded by people who are interested in cultivating wholesome qualities and good things, cultivating mindfulness, cultivating wisdom, that are on a good path, something that you don't get in the world. So the Buddha points out that it is uncomfortable to be with people who are dissimilar. But this cuts both ways. That living in the world, yes, you will be surrounded by people who, generally speaking, tend to agree with you and have the same culture as you and the same desires as you and can lead you into great pleasure and enjoyment of life. I mean, theoretically, this is the idea, being surrounded by family. Of course, it's not true for everyone, but not true at all times, but you really feel it coming to live in a Buddhist meditation center or monastery, that you didn't choose the people that you would be surrounded with. People come and go and are of different temperament and different culture and so on. But on the other hand, these are also people who will challenge you and who will guide you, who will be an example for you and remind you of good things. So what we often experience coming to ordain as a monk or live in a meditation center is the discomfort of the unfamiliar. There's so much that's unfamiliar living in a foreign place, living when we leave home. And it's not just unfamiliar, it's also often uncomfortable. It's not what we're accustomed to. It's not what we prefer. In so many ways, we're not able to attain that which we prefer or obtain the things that we prefer. But this is, in a sense, more valuable than always getting what you want and always having your preferences and your desires appeased and affirmed by those around you. But it's a very real reason for people to be discontent living in the meditation center. You'll hear people say things like they miss their family. We've had people leave because they want to go back to see their children or their family or their loved ones. Because everything here is unfamiliar, and it's not what you are partial towards. It's not your preferred set of experiences. The food is not what we choose. The food is generally pretty good, but we don't get to choose the food. Our dwelling is not what we choose. And the people are not the people that we choose to be with. We have to hopefully get along with them and be able to live in harmony with the people here. But again, on the other side, there's so much value in all of that. There's value in being challenged. And as a training, given that mindfulness practice and the Buddha's teaching in general is a training, it's not a vacation, we can appreciate the challenge, and we should remind ourselves of the value of being challenged. Challenged to eat what we may not prefer, to sleep in a bed in a place that is not where we wish to sleep, having to confront the fear of strange noises, strange sights, strange sounds, strange smells, strange feelings, and strange people. But for the people, it's important to acknowledge the discomfort that can come from living with those who are dissimilar, but also acknowledge that it's far worse to be associated with those who are not interested in good things, that what we have in common here is actually of greater importance than living in the world. So the Buddha doesn't say the dissimilar, he doesn't say that it's unpleasant living as a monastic because we're all different. It's in fact very difficult and unpleasant for someone who has undertaken meditation practice to live in the world among people who are then dissimilar in the most important way, in that they're not interested in mindfulness, they're not interested in goodness. What we have here is not something we should take for granted. What we have here is a community of people all interested in goodness, interested in mindfulness, interested in enlightenment and wisdom, and striving for themselves to free themselves from greed, anger, and delusion. So this lesson goes both ways. It's a lesson in reminding ourselves of the challenge and not being caught off guard by how difficult it is to leave home, how difficult it is to be away from those things that are comfortable and familiar to you. But it's also a reminder of how valuable it is to be in a community that is interested in things that are so hard to find in the world. It's so difficult to find people who are interested in mindfulness, goodness, purity, clarity, wisdom. Most of the world is only interested in sensuality, desire, craving, and anger, and conflict. And this is the way of the world. So these four types of suffering are very real, very important to acknowledge. But the fifth type of suffering is the one that the Buddha warns us against and points out as being the most important, and that is the suffering of wandering, the suffering of being under the power of suffering. So suffering is a part of life. It's not all of life, but it's a fact of life. It's something that we have to live with, we have to confront, and ideally come to understand so that we no longer suffer from it. But if we do not succeed in confronting and overcoming and letting go of the things that are causing us suffering, we become trapped by them. So this type of suffering is the suffering of wandering in samsara, being lost without any direction, without any means of escape. So being subjected to the rule of the defilements and of samsara, which again and again leads us into suffering. Sufferings of birth, the suffering of old age, sickness, death. And the Buddha uses this as a reminder that all of those other types of suffering, whether we're living in the home life, living in the forest, living with what is familiar or unfamiliar, complaining about these things is not of any significance. We have to see beyond this and understand that no matter where we go or what we do, we're still stuck. We're still stuck in our desires and our aversions and our attachments, in our delusions, in our ignorance. We're lost because we're ignorant. We don't know the path. We don't know the way to free ourselves from suffering. And so we wander lifetime after lifetime. We've done this thing we call life so many times. So many times you can no longer count. We've been born, we've gotten old, we've gotten sick. All of the drama that we've experienced in this life is nothing. It's nothing new, it's nothing special. It's just another drop in the ocean of samsara that we wander through blindly and aimlessly. You know, why do we live our lives? Why do we do what we do? What do we get from it? There's no answer. There's no explanation. It's just blindness. We're lost and we wander. And so the significant fact is not that life is suffering. The significant fact, or that life isn't suffering, but that there is suffering in life, that's not the significant fact. The significant fact is that we wander through this. We are lost and we experience this in infinity. We wander lost without rhyme or reason, without meaning or purpose. And the end is just old age, sickness, and death. We don't get anything out of it. So the Buddha said, of all of these things, he ends the verse by saying, don't wander. Don't be under the control of suffering, under the power of suffering. Don't let suffering, don't fall into suffering. So the Buddha's teaching, a way of describing it, is as finding a direction. Finding direction. The Buddha talked about finding the other shore. We're like a person who has gotten in the boat to set it on the ocean, but we have no idea where the shore is, and so we wander aimlessly on the endless ocean until we drown. Our boat capsizes and we drown. But if only we had a compass, a way to find direction. This is what Buddhism provides. One way of describing it is as that compass, that which would gives us a very clear sense of right, wrong, good, bad, useful, useless, valuable, worthless, without having to rely on authority or hearsay or tradition or culture, religion. It gives us this through our own clarity of mind, coming from our investigation and our training in mindfulness. Mindfulness cuts through the specifics of our experience. Mindfulness can be practiced living in a home, of course, can be practiced living in the forest, and the only difference is that it's generally easier to practice mindfulness living in the forest. That's the only difference, the only important difference. Not whether it's more peaceful living in the forest or more peaceful living at home. That's really not as significant as people think. If you come to live in a meditation center or a forest or ordain as a monk thinking that will be a peaceful life, you're probably going to be disappointed. And you're probably doing it out of a craving for those peaceful experiences, which is problematic, not valuable. But anyone can attest, living in a meditation center or monastery, the capacity to practice mindfulness, if you are inclined to do so, is far greater than it would be living in the household, and that's the only difference. Because the truth of suffering has nothing to do with the specifics of our experience. It has, again, to do with our perceptions of them, our perceptions of our experience, of our situation. Your perceptions of living, what it's like to live in the household life, your perceptions of what it's like to live at home, your perceptions of what you have and what you don't have. And if you always crave, if you crave, whether it's enjoying what you have or craving for what you don't have, either way it will never be enough. It will never satisfy you. Craving is a habit. It doesn't lead to satisfaction, it leads to more craving, because craving is habitual. And that's what leads us to say, better if I leave home, that will be happy. And then when we leave home, to think, better I go back home, I will be more happy. Because we're only doing both things out of craving. Leaving home out of craving, wanting to go back home out of craving. If you leave home out of craving, you're very likely to want to leave, because that's the habit of your mind, to crave things that you don't have. But if we can change our perception, if we can appreciate that the only difference between loneliness in the forest and peace in the forest isn't the forest, it's our state of mind, then we truly can become free from suffering as we change our perspective to see things just as they are. Let seeing just be seeing, hearing just be hearing, feeling just be feeling, thinking just be thinking. Through the practice of mindfulness, we accomplish this, reminding ourselves, this is seeing, this is hearing, this is pain. Cultivating this quality of mind that sees things just as they are. Then we no longer wander. We have a true compass to direct us. Not exactly to direct us, but to keep us from getting lost. We have the clarity to see the dangers of craving and clinging. We have the clarity to see the suffering that comes from dependency, the suffering that comes from needing things to be this way and not that way. They have to be like this or I won't be happy. They can't be like this or I won't be happy. Mindfulness leads to independence. Anisito javiharati. Dwell independent. This the Buddha said in the Satipatthana Sutta as the whole purpose of practicing Satipatthana, to dwell independent. That's why we say to ourselves, pain, pain, or thinking, or liking, or disliking. Or why we say rising, falling, or stepping right, stepping left. We're teaching ourselves to be independent, to not make more of our experiences than they actually are, to gain a direction, to not be lost or to not wander, and to not fall into the clutches of suffering. So that's the Dhammapada for today. Thank you for listening.